Hello, everyone. I'm your moderator for this podcast, Amanda Belby with Pulmonology Consultant. With me today is Monica Kraft, MD, who is the Robert and Irene Flynn Professor of Medicine and Chair of the Department of Medicine at the College of Medicine in Tucson. She is also the Deputy Director of the Asthma and Airway Disease Research Center at the University of Arizona Health Sciences. She is with us today to discuss a patient case on eosinophilic asthma. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Kraft.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Let's talk about eosinophilic asthma. Can you give us an overview and an example of a patient with eosinophilic asthma? And how are they different than somebody with allergic asthma?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because there's going to be overlap. So eosinophils, of course, we think of associated with type 2 asthma or asthma that's driven by specific cytokines, IL-4, 5, and 13 being the three that we think about the most. But yet patients who have high eosinophils may have allergy as a driver of the disease or they may not. So they sort of fall into a couple of different categories under the T2 umbrella. So in our last patient, we talked about, you know, allergic triggers and understanding what those are, and perhaps certain times of year, avoid going outside between, you know, high pollen times between like 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., for instance, keeping the windows closed in the house and getting a dehumidifier if one lives in humid areas where dust mites are common. Those kinds of things can be done to avoid those allergic triggers. In the patient who comes where allergy doesn't seem to be as prominent, but eosinophils are there. And when I mention eosinophils, I'm talking about peripheral eosinophils, usually greater than 300 per microliter. That's really when I take note at the peripheral eosinophil count. You know, there are data that suggests that 150 to 300, you know, is a type of eosinophilic asthma. It will be less responsive to some of the biologics we might consider. So really, it's the 300 and up is, and that patient who has frequent exacerbations. And they may also have other characteristics that are different from the allergic asthma patient. They tend to be older in age. They may have an adult onset type of asthma associated with nasal polyps is a characteristic that we see. And obesity may also be part of the equation. Now, saying that, obesity is tough because you can see obesity among all the different asthma phenotypes. But that's sort of the typical scenario. Allergic asthma, certainly, if patients are obese, obesity can make allergic asthma worse. But for this eosinophilic and what we think is an IL-5 driven asthma, obesity is quite prominent. So in that patient, certainly you'd want to do a good clinical history to convince yourself that ATP allergy is not important. I mean, you may still do the RAS testing and IgE to document that. Just because sometimes there can be sort of low-level atopic triggers, so you'd want to know about that. And then in this patient, you certainly could look at exhaled nitric oxide. In general, it may or may not be elevated. It's a little bit heterogeneous that way. And if we are talking about the setting of obesity, we might want to think about gastroesophageal reflux disease as a comorbid condition that can make asthma worse. Certainly sleep apnea. Those kinds of things we'd want to, you know, capture in the clinical history and consider doing more of an evaluation depending on the severity of these particular conditions. And then the workup is similar to what we've done in our allergic asthma patients. So this person would be somebody perhaps in their 50s, usually female, may have had some symptoms as a young person, but not much, and then really comes on with a vengeance in their 50s. And this can be a very challenging kind of asthma to treat. And certainly you'd want a CBC with eosinophils. You know, exhaled nitric oxide, I'd still do the RAS testing for allergy, get imaging, and look at comorbid conditions. And then make sure that their inhaled therapy is maximized, because part of the equation, of course, is adherence, which applies to all kinds of asthma. And it's sometimes really tough to assess adherence in the clinical arena. And so I find the best way to do that is to ask very non-judgmental questions about, you know, how often do you think you take your Symbicort or your Advair. Do you miss doses? It's easy to do. We're all busy people. And, you know, in that setting, I get some, what I consider, I think, very honest answers about what their adherence level is. Because I think before we would consider, you know, the next step in therapy, you know, we want to make sure that they're adherent with the medications that they're on, which often involve three controllers. So at that point, you'd want to maximize their inhaled treatment, treat their comorbid conditions, and then really assess, you know, how high that eosinophil count is and whether you need to go to the next step, which would be biologics.
Thank you again for sharing your expertise with our audience, Dr. Kraft.
Oh, you're welcome. Happy to do it, and good luck, everyone.